Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. American Epic wraps its three-part exploration of a unique aspect of the Jazz Age tonight on PBS. Director Manon McMahon joins me next. The next television festival, Split Screens, opens Friday night here in New York. We'll preview Act 1 of this event next half hour with its program director and host, the popular TV critic Matt Zahler-Zeiss. Also ahead, a mixed opening night for Still Starcrossed, our new classic trivia question of the week, and we honor a sports commentator for any media, TV included, Frank DeFord. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Thank you for joining us on this day after Memorial Day 2017, the day that we honor the men and women who make the supreme sacrifice being of service to our nation and our world. Welcome once again to this special Tuesday edition of the program All About Television. 59 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. Two wonderful guests coming away in the hour ahead, and we invite you, as always, to be part of the program. It's so simple. Raise your voice, pick up the phone, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number's in anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. And if you're shy about making that phone work, how about making our chat room work? It's available to you right now at our homepage. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. We're talking about Simon Apple 04 by name, and we appreciate you being in the room. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people will be live with you. Bernard McMahon, director of American Epic on PBS, will join us live from Los Angeles after these news notes. Still Starcrossed, ABC's latest Shondaland saga and first rooted in classic literature, did mixed business with its premiere hour last night. Some 2.4 million viewers watched the debut, last place in its time period among the broadcast networks. NBC was first with Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Finals, CBS second with a Scorpion repeat. However, Still was first in the time period among adult viewers aged 18 to 49. Overall, 80% of all television viewers last night were not watching an English-language broadcast network. And Glenn Geller is out as president of CBS Entertainment. He's recovering from a mild heart attack this past March, and he was expected to return after an extended medical leave. For now, his position will be assured, or I should say assumed, by scheduling overseer Kelly Kahl and CW executive Tom Sherman. Geller became head of entertainment at CBS in 2015. And that is news notes for today. If you're watching PBS on Tuesday night the last 2 weeks, you might have seen a program called American Epic. It showcased a very unusual musical aspect of the 1920s, which some people refer to as the Jazz Age. The program is narrated by Robert Redford, and it concludes tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time over many public television stations. Joining us live right now, an internet radio exclusive from Los Angeles, the director of this miniseries, Bernard McMahon. Bernard, thanks for being with us.
Pleasure.
To catch up with some of the people who may not have seen your miniseries, what's it all about?
Well, it's about how America conquered the world with records. It's about how in the 20s, American record companies invented electrical sound recording, and they went out across America and started making records for commercial sale of all the different people of America, from Native Americans to Cajuns, African American blues to gospel. And it's a film is about how America first heard itself through those records and how those records invented the musical language that we use today. Pretty much all the music, everything we do today in the musical field comes from those 20s recording sessions. So it's a film about how America democratized music, but it's never been made before because almost all the footage in the film has never been seen before. It's all new research. And so there are three historical films.
Yeah. Sorry? We'll get to in a second to how that footage was obtained for PBS in a moment. But are a lot of people who have seen this show surprised about the musical range that's covered here? Because when people think of the 1920s, when these recordings were made, they think of it as the jazz era. But as you said, there was a wide spectrum of music, of a diverse spectrum of music that's covered here.
Yeah, this film is not about jazz at all. Jazz was discovered and recorded much earlier, in the early 20s. And by that time, jazz had become the popular music of the cities. This period that we're taught that the American Epic is about, the show tonight, is about how around 1927, the record companies set out across the whole of America to start making records to sell to people in all the rural states of America, Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Arizona. And so this is how America was first connected. This was the first social network. So it's very varied because we've attempted for the first time to cover the real breadth of the music and the voices that were heard on these records. And, you know, that's just a reflection of America today. So, yeah, that's why jazz is not a part of this show. This show is about autobiographical songs. The old people were singing songs about their own lives. And this film is about that. It's about American free expression.
What pleases you most about the audience reaction to this series so far?
The most pleasing thing is that some of the stories in the films, American Epic is essentially a series of 10 stories. We filmed and researched over 100 musicians for this film, and we chose 10 for the American Epic film. And some of these, the families and the friends of these musicians who made these records in the 20s, are in the poorest parts of America. So one of the stories in last week's episode was set in the coal mines of Logan, West Virginia, where a whole group of musicians basically invented the music of Woody Guthrie, Bob Dylan, and Bruce Springsteen. It all emanated from those coal mines. And so I received letters from the people in that town, how moved they were to have this story told for the first time. Like, really kind of, my eyes welled up in tears with the reactions of these people to see their relatives, their grandparents, their parents on the screen, you know, for the first time getting the recognition they deserve. But that's been the most beautiful reaction across the country, the letters from the families of these musicians, and then seeing all these distant relatives that are connected to these families suddenly all talking to each other and wanting to make pilgrimages to the towns that their families, that these musicians came from. That's been really moving to me. And of course, the audience reaction has been wonderful. I've been very touched by the extraordinary critical reaction to this, and the people that have come up to me and personally really been moved by the show, that this is all new to them. But the family's reactions to this has been, as you can imagine, particularly like moving to me.
Well, welcome, Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, into our chat room. Simon Apple 04 by name. So, Rick, if you want to give us a call, please do at 646-652-296, or use that room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Of course, everybody else, come on in the room or use the phone. We do appreciate it. Bernard, how did this project come your way?
Well, it was 10 years of research. I was a child. I was in love with America, and as a small boy, I would look up at in London, look at the skies, and as the planes were flying over, I would wonder if they were going to America and wish I could be on them. So, this film is a love letter to America, and it was a story that just interested me. I became fascinated in these musicians as a filmmaker that had made these very first records that had shaped all the music that we listen to today. And I was surprised to find that many of these musicians, there were no known photographs of them. We didn't know anything about their lives. Furthermore, we didn't really know anything about how the records were made, the machinery they recorded these records on. There were no, the first electrical sound recording equipment, the first microphone, the first amplifier. Before we started that this film, there were no known photographs of one of America's greatest inventions. Everything we're doing, you know, all the things that we're doing now, that you're recording now, are based on that technology. So it's almost as if, you know, the photographs of the Apollo mission were lost and the film footage was lost. So it was a mission to track that down before everyone that had been involved in that had was dead. And so, it was, and it was a great opportunity to explore this country that I love and travel to some of the remotest parts of America, filming these people. And you mentioned there's a, it is a three-part series, but there is a, and the third part, which is perhaps one of my favorite episodes, is airing tonight at 9 p.m. on PBS. That's a very, very rich and varied film. But the following week, there's a fourth film called The American Epic Sessions, in which we have, our engineer, has, Nick Berg, has rebuilt this machine, and we have 20 of America's greatest artists coming in to record on that machine, produced by Jack White and T-Bone Burnett. And that's like a musical. And that's like the highlight of that fourth film, but the highlight of the whole series.
American Epic is the three-part PBS miniseries that's been on the last two Tuesday nights, narrated by Robert Redford, and he does the honors again for the third and final chapter of this. That's tonight at 9 p.m. over most public television stations. I believe Channel 13, WNT 13 here in New York, is also one of the people, one of the stations running, as well as WRW down in Long Island. We're speaking with the director of the series, Bernard McMahon. He joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Appleman, we'll be live from New York for the program All About the Tube. Glad you're with us on this day after Memorial Day 2017. You have a question or comment for Bernard? Don't be shy. Phone in 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04. My name is welcome J.R. McLean 10 and Rick Webber from Philadelphia into the room. Coming up Friday at our regular time, we're going to explore the relationship, the growing relationship between China and the United States when it comes to television production. Shows from the U.S. going to China and vice versa. We'll speak with somebody in the big know about that. He is the founder of E! When it was known as Movie Time. He was on the show several years ago, Larry Nader, and now he is the head of a company called Meton Global Entertainment Group, which is out to do both, showcase U.S. programming in China and Chinese formats here in the United States. Larry Nader, the founder of E!, joins me live Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And next Monday on our program, we will focus on a show premiering that night on VH1. It's the new scripted series, Daytime Divas, and we have the sister act that put it together. Creative executive producers Amy and Wendy Engelberg will be our guests. That's Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Bernard, how long did it take to find all of this footage, this rare footage, and was there like a key development that really unlocked things?
10 years to put it all together, and it was really the work of my. It was a, like all filmmaking is collaborative, and so it was the involvement of my producers and co-writers, Alison McGorty and Duke Erickson, who helped in that search, and we helped to fund the film to get all, to do the initial research to track it down. My producer, Jack McLean. And then on top of that, you know, you need we have an amazing editor, Dan Gitlin, who was able to source all this material, basically compile all this material and keep track of it and turn it into sort of into a succinct edit for the film. So I think one of the big breakthrough moments probably was a couple of things. One, which was really wonderful, was finding this amazing color footage of Mississippi John Hurt performing that you'll see tonight in a collector's house in Los Angeles. Also tonight, I won't give it away, but there's an amazing close to the film where John Hurt's being interviewed and this extraordinary thing starts happening behind him. I was staggered when I found this in an archive, in a private archive, and I saw this footage. I think the other big breakthrough is in the fourth film, where we rebuild the machine, was meeting Nick Berg, who had literally restored the entire machine. Those are big breakthroughs. But every single time we tracked down a family member, it was like a sort of huge joy when you've tracked down the families of these musicians and got to hear their stories firsthand from their children. That was a very moving, you know?
Mm-hmm. And Bernard, we are about to hear from our first caller of the day. Hello, you're on Tomorrow on Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, my name is Mike. I'm calling in from Los Angeles, California.
Mike, great to have you in the program. You're on the line with Bernard McMahon from American Epic. Go ahead.
That's awesome. Bernard, I've been watching
Hi, Mike.
The show, and the show is fascinating so far, and the music is just phenomenal. Is there going to be a soundtrack or anywhere that we can listen to this after it's all done?
Yeah, Sony are putting out a soundtrack of the all the archival music, like a box set, and that's just come out now. That's called the American Epic, the collection. But there's also a single CD and LP called the soundtrack. That's just like a kind of 14 tracks to get you into it. And then there's going to be an album of all the contemporary artists that recorded that's coming out, I think on June the 9th, and that's coming out too on Columbia, and so it's kind of pretty exciting. There's also a book as well, which tells the whole story of the making of the film that's just come out on Touchstone. So yeah, there's a lot of other things to explore.
Really, really cool. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling. Thanks for doing that right here. Our friend from Los Angeles calling in on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. It's very interesting, Bernard, that the time these recordings were made, when it came to film, film was always starting to try to experiment with sound. You know, Warner Brothers, the jazz singer with Al Jolson, and so on and so forth. Who made these recordings? Were they entrepreneurs who were out to expose this music to a wider audience? Was it the major record companies at the time? Who was doing these recordings?
It was the major record company. They were, at the time, radio had become really popular in the cities. And the audience that was buying records predominantly in the cities stopped buying records and listening to the radio instead. So very similar to like file sharing today and streaming. And so the record companies thought we're going to be out of business. So that's what gave them the idea of going out across America and trying to sell records to these poor rural people who they never really thought about selling records to. And what they had was, first of all, they just invented, as I said, first microphone, the first amplifier, so they were able to actually record any kind of music, you know, however quiet it was, however unusual instrumentation, they had the means to do it. And secondly, they had these little wind-up record players that they called Vitrolas. And those allowed you to listen to records without electricity. So those two things allowed them to potentially sell records to rural America, but it was a much bigger operation than they imagined, because they essentially had to get on the they had to advertise across all America in local papers and get people to come to these auditions, because they wanted to sell music that these people wanted to buy, and that was the music they listened to in their local areas. So they held auditions across the whole of America. And thousands of people would travel, sometimes hundreds of miles, to the audition. And they would audition. The ones they thought were good, they would record. And they were all recorded onto a pulley-driven lathe. All the recordings were made onto a wax disc that was on a giant cutting lathe. And that was powered. They couldn't trust the electricity to power the lathe that turned the wax disc. And so it was powered by a giant lead weight that would slowly fall to the ground. And, you know, it took about 3.5 minutes for that weight to hit the floor, which is why the pop song today is 3.5 minutes long. That was the equipment they were using. So it was a huge operation. They were going out there into some of the most remote parts of America, bringing this enormous gear with them, recording these wax discs, shipping these wax discs back every other day, crated in ice in New York's press up, and then shipping the records back out to rural America. So it was like this amazing American entrepreneurial activity. You know, Americans invented sound recording, electrical sound recording, and they kind of really kind of developed the whole idea of distributing records and recording all different kinds of music. So even though it was done for money, it was done for profit, it was done to save their business, it became a very democratic thing, because Mexican-Americans, African-Americans, Hawaiians, Native Americans, they were all given an opportunity to sing their songs on these records. And as long as the records sold, they carried on recording more of them. So I think the rest of the world watched this and copied it. And it turned music from being an elitist thing into a democratic thing in which everybody had an opportunity to speak. Very topical today.
Bernard McMahon is the director of American Epic, the three-part PBS miniseries narrated by Robert Redford that concludes tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Time over most public television stations. Bernard joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Show. He's with us for a few more minutes, so if you want to give him a call or get into our chat room, do so right now. The chat room number, of course, is SimonApple04. You'll find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Rick River from Philadelphia is still in the room. Or give us a ring, 646-652-2906. And coming up June 12th on Tomorrow Will Be Televised, we will have the folks behind the newest game show on GFN. It's called Emo Genius. Yes, it's emojis and getting them into the game show field. We've got the executive producers. They're from Idiot Test, and that's Craig Lynch and Larry Barron. They'll both join us live. That's a week from Monday, June 12th, right here, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Once you've got a hold of these rare recordings, was there anything done to preserve the sound quality? You know, when we talk about film, for example, particularly film from the early days of motion pictures, many of them were on nitrate stock, and many of them were lost because the nitrate would burn, literally burn, the motion picture film, so it could never be retrieved. And thanks to what's been going on with film preservation, we've been able to get a lot of, many of the key motion pictures, and some of the ones that were thought to be in danger of being lost forever, not only in shape, but in great shape, so it's being carried on services like Turner Classic Movies. So for your project, was there anything done digitally or otherwise to preserve the sound quality?
That was a vast part of the whole project. And there was a team of people that were involved in that I think have done revolutionary work in that field. Nick Berg, our engineer, perfected a method of transferring these very rare discs. We had help from Sony Music and Lars Edegren at Paramount, who provided us with some very rare metal parts. Most of these don't exist anymore, but we had them, and we were able to press up new copies of the records to dub from the original metal parts. We also had access to an archive in Hayes, the EMI Archive Trust, that loaned us some unbelievably rare records, being sealed in manila envelopes since the 20s, had been sent over, that no one had ever played before. But Nick DeBerg developed a method of transferring these records using the knowledge he had gained from rebuilding, restoring the equipment that they'd been recorded on in the 20s. So we had the opportunity to record on this equipment in the fourth film that's airing on the 6th of June, we were able to actually hear how these records were made for the first time in almost 100 years. So Nick developed a method of transferring the old disc, knowing that, and a team involving Peter Henderson, Duke Erickson, and Joel Castella set about the process of restoring the records, which is essentially manually removing remaining clicks and pops that were left on these sometimes pristine discs. But the huge breakthrough really is the transfer process and using the system that Nick developed, we were just able to get much greater fidelity off these records than has ever been heard before. And so they sound just literally like in your face, really kind of powerful and present. I mean, I think those guys have done an amazing job. But yeah, it was 10 years tracking down the best copies of the records that are on the soundtrack. And at least 2 years of work involved in the transfers and restoration process to get the records to sounding how they are. So if anybody, when you go and buy the music, just the box set, for example, put on Robert Johnson's Crossroads and listen to the transfer of that and compare it to everything that's been before, and I think it'll be obvious to anyone how amazing the work these guys have done is. I mean, this is not something you're going to hear as clearly on an MP3 online. I mean, this stuff, you'll need to at least buy the CDs or the vinyl to get the full effect of this, you know, of how great this stuff sounds. But yeah, that's been a huge job doing that, is to make the music sound, to give the music its proper sound and to let it breathe, you know? And we've tried to do that with the visuals as well. Every time we try to track down the original nitrate prints of every single old bit of film footage, that in itself is like a huge job making film, you know? So no stone unturned. And I have to credit all those their incredible work, Patrick Ferris and people like this, for what they've done at helping find all this stuff.
One of the most unique musical chapters of the 20th century comes to life one more time tonight in the finale of American Epic, the three-part PBS miniseries. The third chapter comes your way, narrated by Robert Redford, tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Time and Pacific Time over most public television stations. As always, the PBS program, you now expect your locals to the PBS station area, but when they play it, because some PBS stations will delay the presentation until later in the week or on the weekend. And many PBS stations will also have a replay during the weekend as well. So check your locals to the PBS station area and when they're playing it. For more details about the program online, we're going to give you two places to go. One is www.pbs.org. And the other, to find out more not only about the series, but about the period and these rare recordings, www.americanepic.com. That's www.americanepic.com. And when we put tonight, the American Epic Session, the special movie about this whole project, that will be playing on PBS as well. It's June 6th on PBS, the American Epic Sessions. Bernard McMahon, the director of American Epic, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations to you and everybody involved in this project. Robert Redford also for narrating it. It's a pleasure to have you with us, and all the very best to you and your future work for public television and TV overall.
Thank you very much, and thank you. I hope everyone enjoys it that tunes in tonight at 9 p.m. I much appreciate it. Take care.
Absolutely. I'm sure they will. You got it, Bernard. Take care.
Thanks.
Bernard McMahon, director of American Epic, joining us live from Los Angeles. Our classic trivia question of the week and more on Tomorrow Tell Live. But first, we pull up some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. One of the movies right now on this early summer movie season is Alien Covenant. And you can hear it if you're not inclined to see it in the movies. You can hear it from the wonderful novelization of this film by Alan Dean Foster and narrated by Tim Taylorson. All you got to do is get a subscription to Audible.com. And it's so easy. Just use this URL, audiblechild.com/televised. Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. With over 180,000 titles to choose from. You can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio. So if you sign up at audiblechild.com/televised, you get one free audio book like Alien Covenant or any of your choice, and 1 month trial service plus great customer service because Audible is owned by Amazon.com. So check this out, audibletrial.com/televised, and see why audible.com, and actually hear it too, how it will transform the way you hear the world. audibletrial.com/televised. And now before the part of the hour, let's get into our classic trivia question of the week. And if you first get the correct answer, you will win this week. Let's see if we have our second winner in the several weeks. Supergirl is one of the top new shows the last couple of years, first on CBS and just wrapped up its second season on the CW. Here's our trivia question this week. What is Supergirl's Earth name? We're talking about the secret identity, folks. What is Supergirl's Earth name? If you know the answer, email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. It's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and your full name and address, and if you are first with the correct answer before Friday afternoon, you win. And if you just missed the question, no problem. I will post it tomorrow morning on my Facebook page and my Twitter hashtag at UBCSimonDWBT. That's at UBCSimonDWBT. Remember, in order to be in and win, be in. So play. And all the very best. When we come back, we'll preview a brand new event that comes to New York this Friday at the IFC Center. It's called Split Screens Festival. The popular TV critic Max Allardyce will join me after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are connected to the best internet radio in the universe. www.blogtalkradio.com. More than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for Ed Office's World. Check out what his world is all about today, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, and again on Thursday at this very hour, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, that's BTR 24/7 for you at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow We Televise on this day after Memorial Day, Tuesday, 2017. Simon Applebaum live from New York, 59 degrees at the top of the hour. Another wonderful guest coming your way in the 30 minutes ahead. We invite you as always to be part of the program, so give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or even our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. By the way, Jay and McLean 10 just got into our chat room, so before we get to our next guest, I want to let you know what he said. He said, I love the episodes of American Epic. Very important in this modern day and for our children. Where can we go to find out more? Again, for you with JM, it's pbs.org. And to find out more about the series overall and these rare recordings, AmericanEpic.com. That's AmericanEpic.com. If you listen to our program, you know that we are now a nation of television festivals here in New York, in Los Angeles, recently Chicago, ATX in Austin, Texas, ATV in Atlanta, ITVF in New England, and on and on and on. The latest television festival is called Split Screens. It starts this Friday night at IFC Center here in New York. And joining us live here in the Big Apple to talk about it is its program director and host, the popular TV critic, Matt Salazar. Matt, great to have you with us. Matt, you're on the air. Hang on for 1 second. Let's go for Matt again. Matt, can you hear me? Hello, hello. I don't know if Matt is on mute or something is up. Let's try one more time, see if we can get him on the air. I know he has called in. Let's give it a go. Hang on for 1 second. Oh, he just dropped off. Matt, call us back, 646-652-2906, and we will get you on the air. Once again, I want to welcome Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, into our chat room. That's how you can get involved with our guests as well. That's SimonApple04, and you'll find that at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Again, coming Friday on Tomorrow We Televise, a very unusual topic. But it's growing and growing, and that is the China-U.S. relations. The former head of E, Larry Nehmer, will be with us. He's got his Maytan Global company working on that issue. Okay, I believe Matt is now with us. Matt Salazar from Split Screen Festival, thanks for joining us.
Hey, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. You are doing great. Appreciate you being aboard. How's things going?
Going well. We're getting ready we're doing the final preparations for the festival, which begins on Friday with the premiere of the new David Simon and George Pelicano series, The Deuce. And then we got a full slate of six more days of stuff. So it's going to be pretty action-packed.
What do you think of TV festivals overall, and especially their ability to break new talent into television?
Well, you know, it depends on, that's kind of a tricky question because a lot of television festivals are, you know, they're introducing shows that already have deals. We actually do have a panel on the web series, on the sort of the emerging art of the web series that we're doing, and that does showcase some new talent. But our premieres are things like The Sinner, the USA Network show, which is, a thriller. We're also showing a lot of ongoing series like Brockmire and the Girlfriend Experience, and we're doing some looks back at classic shows like The Sopranos and Hannibal, and we're doing actor panels with people like Rami Malek of Mr. Robot and Michael McKean of Better Call Saul and Margot Martindale, who's on Sneaky Pete and seemingly every other show.
A lot of this first shot with Footprints is, as you say, a celebration of television. Why did you decide to get involved with it to the extent that you did, where you're hosting, you're actually sort of curating the festival? Why did you decide to take this all-in approach? Matt, you there? Somehow we just lost Matt. Well, Matt, the sound. Let's see if we can. He just dropped out. Matt, give us a call back. For some reason, when you were about to speak, you just you dropped the sound. So come on back in, 646-652-2906. Apologize to you and all for the air. Okay, Matt just got back in, and we have him. Matt, just to ask you, what made you decide to go all in with this particular festival? What about the way this is structured really appealed to you?
Well, the organizers of the festival are the same people who do Doc NYC, which is based around documentaries, and they approached me about programming the festival because they liked my writing and they liked my sensibility, and they wanted to try to differentiate it from other festivals. And the main thing that we've done is really focus it on the process, on the aesthetics of TV, like, you know, how does an episode that you love get written, get produced, get directed, the performances that you love, what are the writers contributing to that, how much are the actors contributing to that. In the Rami Malek panel, we're going to be showing, for example, clips of him performing in different modes as the hacker hero of that show, Elliot Alderson. And we'll talk to him about, you know, what are you doing with your voice in that scene? How is acting for voiceover different from acting in a regular scene? And what do you do when you're with your voice, with your body, and in, you know, a therapy scene as opposed to a scene in the office? Like, it's real, like, inside the actor studio type stuff. And we're going to do the same thing with filmmakers, writers, producers. We've got a panel on The Man in the High Castle, which is specifically about how they create that alternate universe that they show. We also have this thing called Rewind, where we are taking an individual episode of a show and going through it in detail, like just concentrating on a single episode of a show. We're doing the finale of The Girlfriend Experience, the finale of Hannibal, the Pine Barrens episode of The Sopranos. Do you remember that one where they're trying to chase the Russian through the woods?
Mm-hmm. A classic.
And yeah. And that one, like, you know, we've got like David Chase, the writer Terrence Winter, and Steve Buscemi, who directed the episode, are going to be there to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. I believe you also have Aisha Hines with that wonderful Harriet Tubman episode that was on more than a month ago of Underground. A lot of people think she could get the Emmy Award, or at least an Emmy nomination off that. We had Anthony Hemingway, the director of Underground, on this program. And a lot of people who have seen this show are still saying it's one of the best hours of television this year.
I think that's true. It's certainly one of the most audacious hours of television this year. And there aren't too many shows that would focus an entire episode on basically a monologue, which is what this one does. And it's a throwback. It's kind of a throwback to things like, it kind of reminded me a little bit of a movie like 12 Angry Men, which is set entirely in a jury room, except, of course, most of the talking is being done by one person. I really can't think of too many precedents for what they're doing here, except for maybe a one-man show, one-woman show.
We're speaking with the popular TV critic, Matt Sauer-Zeitz. He is the program director of both of the newest television festival in town, certainly in our town. It's Footprints Festival, begins this Friday, June 2nd, at the IFC Center in Greenwich Village. A wonderful facility, by the way, for movies and also for showcasing television as well. Matt joins me here in New York this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from the Big Apple. Delighted you're with us. 59 degrees on top of the hour. If you have a question or comment from Matt, give us the ring, 646-652-2906. That number's good anyway. You're catching us across the country or worldwide here on Blog Talk Radio. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Rick Webber, our friend from Philly, is in the room. Coming up next Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, the sister act behind the brand new VH1 series premiering Monday night, Daytime Divas, Amy and Wendy Engelberg. They will join us. That's next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Now, of all the new series that you could showcase off the bat this Friday night, why did you pick the Deuce?
Well, because I'm a big fan of David Simon, mainly. And also, who wouldn't want to premiere the new David Simon? And it's also, it's a New York show, and we're a New York festival, and this is set in Times Square in the 1970s, and it's about the vice and, you know, the vice and porn and sleaze of Times Square in the 70s and how that affected New York City as a whole, you know, in all the different layers. So there's kind of a Wire-like aspect to it where they're examining life at, you know, several different layers of society simultaneously, different institutions. It's very, very cool.
And you're also showcasing The Sinner, the USA Network series with Jessica Biel that premieres, I believe, in August. And I know the advanced buzz on that show is quite high.
Yeah, it is. It's very intense, and it's kind of an unusual thriller in that it's about this woman who commits a shocking murder in plain view of everyone, so there's never a question of who did it. It's more a question of why she did it, and then it becomes this deep dive into her psychology. It's much more of an interior kind of show. I'll be curious to see what people think of it, but the people who made it definitely knew what they were doing.
Mm-hmm. How easy or hard was it to bring all these elements together? Because when you have this festival, an event like this, you're celebrating the best television around. You're introducing people to new faces, new series that could become the next major shows in the medium. You're also bringing web series. I'm going to get back to the web series panel in a moment. And you're also showcasing the special nuances of the medium, whether it is how, in the case of Man in the High Castle, the production design works, or maybe the other panel, how the cinematography works, or in the case of Rami Malek, how his own performance works in the process of creating an entire series. How much cooperation were you able to get from the different networks, from different studios and production companies to pull this all together?
Well, quite a bit. And in fact, the only obstacle that we ran into is that shows, you know, the traditional idea of the season, you know, which ran from like September through May every year, and then nothing happened during the summer. That's kind of gone out the window. And that means that there were some shows that we wanted to get that were unavailable because they're making the show. Like, they're not going to shut down production of the show and go do this, you know. So that somewhat limited what we were able to do. But what we were able to get was a pretty amazing lineup of stuff. And I'm particularly pleased with the fact that we got to do something. I've always dreamed about doing this kind of microscope approach to a film or television festival where you're not just, you know, it's great to show a movie or an episode of a TV show and sit around and talk about it. But I think it's much more interesting if you're kind of trying to delve into it and open up the hood of the car and see how the motor works. And a lot of people who watch TV and love TV don't actually know how things are done, how they're made. Like, and that's fine for a lot of people, but I consistently find that when I reveal these little details to people in social settings, they're fascinated by them. It's kind of like the DVD supplements that used to be so commonplace. A large part of what we're doing is like that.
Mm-hmm. A number of the shows you're going to be introducing to people are shows that have gotten critical acclaim, and they're shows that are very tough to classify. One example of that is Search Party on TBS. Came out late last fall, great reviews, but it's very difficult to classify because at moments it's tragic, at some moments it's comedy, at some moments it's dramedy, at some moments it's really solid drama. And like Atlanta, for example, on FX, it's tough to sort of say what it is unless you see it.
Yeah, that's very true. But I find that's increasingly true of a lot of the shows that I really, really admire, where I have trouble summing them up in one sentence. And I think Search Party, which is about a group of college classmates investigating the disappearance of one of their peers, you know, I don't know how I would describe that. It is, like you were saying, it's a thriller, but it's also a relationship comedy and a story about a group of friends And it kind of has some weird similarities to Girls, but there's also a kind of an existential quest aspect to it. And there are parts of it that reminded me of that Stanley Kubrick film, Eyes Wide Shut, which sounds really weird unless you actually watch the show. And then you go, oh, yeah, I see that. Girlfriend Experience is another show like that. I that was an extraordinary series, the first season of that. And I had no idea, first of all, how they were going to turn that movie into a TV show. And it turns out they didn't really try. They kind of just made up a whole new story that had the same name. But as that show went on, like the each passing episode, it became harder and harder for me to pigeonhole it and say what it was exactly. And by the time they got to the ending, it was just completely mind-blowing. Like that finale, which we're going to show, and we're going to go over it with Amy Semetz and Lodge Kerrigan, who are the filmmakers, is one of the best finales I've ever seen. And I've seen a lot of finales in the decades that I've been writing about TV.
Mm-hmm. Lodge was on our show last year. I have to say, Riley Keough's performance in that series with Steven Soderbergh was extraordinary. I thought it should have gotten an Emmy nomination, personally. I did get
I
it on
so
well,
too.
But it's not an Emmy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Another series that you are highlighting that we now know is not going to go forward with a season two is The Get Down. And I wanted to get your thoughts about showcasing it, especially in light now of the decision, which apparently is more Baz Luhrmann's decision and not Netflix's decision to not go a second season.
Yeah, I think that's a real bummer. And I thought that was a very special show. I had some problems with it in the first half of the first season, but I think towards the end of season one, it really started to find its voice. And I thought season two was it's not even season two, technically. It was part two of season one. They broke up the production of it. But I thought the second half of the first season was great. It was just great. I mean, I really wanted to see more of it, and it's a shame that it's not continuing. But on the plus side, at least we get to give a public farewell to The Get Down, and that's going to be really exciting. And we've got the co-creator, Stephen Adley Gurgis, is going to be there, co-producer Nelson George, who's also an esteemed TV producer and critic before he became a producer, and we've got a lot of the team that created the music is going to be there too, and I understand that some cast and crew are going to attend as well, so it's going to be almost like a second wrap party and a farewell and a wake for The Get Down, so I hope people can turn out for that.
The popular TV critic Max Olivais is the program director and the host of Split Screen Festival, the newest television festival of the nation. It starts this Friday at the IFC Center in Greenwich Village here in New York. And Max joins us live this half hour right here on Tomorrow We Televise. 2 minutes with Max before the top of the hour. So give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04. By name, our friend Rick Rick from Philly is still in the room. If you continue with this festival for year two and beyond, how do you want to see this grow?
I don't know yet. I mean, you know, we haven't even done our first one yet, so I don't know how I would begin to answer that. I mean, I would certainly, I think it's going to be a question of, you know, we'll get to the end of it and we'll say, all right, what worked and what didn't, and what do we want to do more of, really? I personally hope that people turn out for the more eccentric sort of panels, like, you know, the one about the production design of Man in the High Castle and the panels where we're taking apart single episodes of shows like the Girlfriend Experience and The Sopranos and Underground, because those are things that no other television festival is doing that. You know, they're not doing that kind of thing. Or if they are doing it, they're not doing it with quite the degree of geekery that I'm going to bring to it. And also, I'm moderating, I believe, every single one of these panels myself. So there's an element of Iron Man, you know, the Iron Man triathlon here. So, you know, by the end of it, I think for people who hold a festival pass, I think part of the fun of it will be to watch my slow mental and physical disintegration as the festival progresses.
Well, if you need help, Matt, I'm available. So give the ring. I'll holler and come right over.
I may take you up on that.
Okay, you got it. Talk about the web series panel. Who's involved with that? And what's your thoughts on web series these days? Because one thing that's becoming more and more clear is that smart TV sets and smart devices are becoming the way that many, many people are now watching web programming. whether it's Netflix or Hulu or Amazon or Crackle or apps on Apple TV and so forth. A, your thoughts about this panel, and B, do you think ultimately because of smart TVs and smart TV devices that web series are going to evolve in a particular way?
I think they definitely are, and I also think that there's a place for the television equivalent of low-budget filmmaking, which is what web series tend to be. And you don't see a whole lot of – occasionally you'll see something that's more of a kind of a genre thing. Like there's a lot of fan-made Star Trek stuff out there, and we've got actually a show called Bravest Warriors, which is by the Pendleton Ward, the mastermind of Adventure Time. That's animated. But a lot of these things are more kind of intimate. I mean, they're shot in real locations. They're cast with people that the filmmakers know personally, and they tend to be about real people in real situations. And the tone varies widely from series to series, but they tend to keep it small. And my dream for that, for those kind of series, is that they're able to find an audience in some other way than besides word of mouth. You know, like, and I think, and I would also like to see them develop in their own way, apart from the fact that they're increasingly being viewed as a farm team for the networks. You know, like, I mean, I think it's great that High Maintenance and Insecure started out as web series, and Broad City also. But I love the fact that there's a lot of web series out there that have kind of existed in their own ecosystem, and they're not necessarily just like they're sitting there on deck waiting for Showtime to come and pick them up, you know?
Mm-hmm. Matt, we have a quick call from Rick while we're from Philadelphia. Rick, we have a few moments. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm wondering when you were talking about dissecting certain shows, like how exactly does that go down? Or are you watching with a microphone, or are you actually stopping it kind of like a college lecture, or how's that work?
It depends. I mean, it varies from show to show, but in some, you know, and also depends on what the subject of the panel is. For the acting panel, I chose actors whose work I was very familiar with, and I've gone through it, and we're going to show particular clips that illustrate different ways of performing this character, and then we're going to talk about it. But in the case of individual episodes of shows, we're going to watch the episode of the show together on a big screen, which is kind of exciting because TV doesn't usually get seen that way. And then we'll discuss it in detail, and we may run particular scenes again if we need to. But stuff like Man in the High Castle, that's going to be a whole different thing because we have the actual post-production team coming in, and they've got a whole presentation that they're going to do where they're going to show you like what the set looked like, you know, before there were any actors on it, what elements were built, what elements were added in CGI, and they'll show you like what their reference points were. In some cases, they went and unearthed old photographs and sometimes even paintings and sketches of things that, you know, Hitler or Hirohito fantasized about building, and then they digitally built it. And so you actually get to see how they create this world one layer at a time. And that's a case where, like, I'm not going to be doing a hell of a lot of moderating on that one because those people really know their stuff, and they're going to be bringing us through this world. So it varies from one thing to the next, but I can definitely guarantee you that every single panel that you go to, you're going to learn something that you didn't know going in.
Awesome. It sounds awesome, and I'm hoping to get up to NYC for a couple of days and come check you. Check as much out as I can.
That would be fantastic. Look me up if you come.
Awesome. I definitely will. Thank you, Simon.
You're very welcome, Rick. Take care. Rick Redwell from Philadelphia here on Tomorrow Be Televised. If you want more details about Split Screens Festival, here's where you go online. It's www.splitscreensfestival.com. It's www.splitscreensfestival.com. Gives you all the details, breaks down the timeline for the various days and events. It all kicks off this Friday night, June 2nd, at the IFC Center in New York. If you've never gone to IFC Center, maybe this is a go for this festival. It's a wonderful location to see any kind of film or television matter, and I wish the folks at Split Screen the very, very best of luck. I think this is the beginning of a marvelous new event, springtime, summertime, here in the Big Apple. Matt Salazar, the film director, the host, the TV critic, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations on getting this off the ground. Hopefully, the beginning of this is a fantastic run, and we'd love to have you back anytime. I enjoy your work a lot, and love to have you back on the program. So you have an open invite, and again, if you need a little moderating breather, please let me know.
All righty. Thank you very much. Take care.
You too, Matt, the greatest. Take care. That's all it's like. The Flipspeed Festival right here on Tomorrow will be televised. And before we leave you, a wonderful few words of honor to a marvelous talent who passed away this past Sunday, Frank DeFord. When it came to writing about anything in sports, and I do mean anything in sports, nobody did it better in so many different media as Frank DeFord did. In the pages of Sports Illustrated, as one of the regular reporters on Real Sports with Brian Gumbel from the get-go on HBO, as a member of the sports reporters on ESPN, as well as his work early on with NBC Sports, including serving as a regular correspondent for their pre-NFL game shows, I believe during the 1980s and 90s. Through it all, Frank DeFord had class, style, no ugly bones in the body, and just did his work marvelously. And he always looked for the unique truth behind a given situation in sports. Frank DeFord was 76 years great. He will be missed. He has been suffering the last month or so from an undisclosed illness. He is with the legends of sports television and media right now, and I'm sure he is meshing in with them very, very well. Of course, condolences to his family and his millions of followers on National Public Radio, SI, and so many other places. Frank DeFord passed away this past Sunday at the age of 76. One of the greats, not just in sports media, but any media. Friday on Tomorrow Will Be Televised, the founder of E, Larry Neiman, will join us. He is involved now as president and CEO of a very unique production company, Medvin Global Entertainment Group, that's working with both Chinese and U.S. production sources to work with television in both countries. And coming up next Monday, right here, we will have the sister act behind the brand new VH1 dramedy, Daytime Divas, that premieres next Monday night, Amy and Wendy Engelberg. If you came in late on today's program or want to catch up on episodes you missed, we make it so easy for you. Go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. You can also check out the podcast version 24/7, both at iTunes.com and Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. If you don't have Apple TV, go to an Apple Store near you, or order it online. Let me know what you thought about today's episode. We had two sensational guests with us. What you thought about what they had to say, and what you thought about where TV is at and where it's going. We love to hear from you anytime. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter at this handle. It's at @UBCSimonTWBT. @UBCSimonTWBT. We appreciate what you have to say, because what you say matters. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate is Candace Williams, ADK of Blog Talk Radio General Manager, with Jay Soderberg as Executive Content Producer, the co-founders of this very enterprise, Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow's Televised is brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. But Tomorrow's Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your day and your week. We are back on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.